heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Well, you hear a lot about the term globalist. What's a globalist? And it's become a hot word, as well as a patriot. What's a patriot? Nationalism, patriotism, globalism. What do they all mean, huh? Let's define, first of all, up front here, people, what a globalist is. Okay, let's define that. A globalist is a person who advocates the interpretation or planning of economic and foreign policy in relation to events and developments throughout the world. It's a person who's organized and advocating, or they want to eliminate national boundaries, the divisions, if you will. It's a globalist. You want to have one global view, kind of a kumbaya kind of thing. You all hold hands and sing in the sunlight kind of thing, I guess. Some people have that idea. Now, I love the Urban Dictionary, as you already know out there. It's my go-to source for any intelligent source of information, is the Urban Dictionary. Now, let me read you theirs. A globalist is someone who believes that ultimately all borders and nations should be dissolved. See, they always get to the point. I love the Urban Dictionary. Resulting in one single world government, right? Now, what's funny about that is we can't even get along in one country. Can you imagine a whole world of these puppets? Just mind-blowing, isn't it? And it goes on, the Urban Dictionary says, the motivations behind this ideology can be categorized into political and economic motivations. Now, you always should get nervous when I use the word motivations. Because as I've been talking to you previously, everybody has a motivator. They're all motivated for something. In many cases, it's the greed, it's the power, it's the corrupt that are motivated, because they use people as stepping stones to get what they want out of the big picture of life. Again, it's a fight of good versus evil. It's always going to be that, people, always. There'll never be a topic we talk about that doesn't talk about good and evil in this world, because it exists everywhere. Well, the Urban Dictionary goes on to define globalism, that the support for this mechanism is strong among corporations and the super rich. And they point out a number of reasons why. I thought they'd be worth sharing here. First off, for the destruction or weakening of nation states would allow corporations to gain notably more power. Now, that's interesting to me, huh? So the power seekers are in play here, I guess, is what this should tell you and I when that word comes up, right? Next up, the movement of cheap labor from areas of low demand to areas of high demand would allow for wages to be kept low, along with providing a source of disposable labor. There's a lot of talk about labor as far as even the borders here in the United States are concerned, and certainly the borders throughout Europe have experienced the same thing. What we're seeing right now is a reshuffling of the cards. It's a reshuffling of the deck, if you will. That's what you're seeing around the globe here. And I think the world goes through this on a pretty regular basis, people, as the power seekers try to rise to the top and use the rest of the people at their will. I guess that's be my definition of globalism, huh? Interesting. Well, let's define a patriot. A patriot, well, that's someone who supports their country, passionate about their country. They're passionate, let's use that word. And they're prepared to defend it against enemies or detractors, probably at all cost. Now, most of that's the definition, at all cost is my words, but I think that would define a patriot, right? Again, what's the Urban Dictionary say about that? Well, they say a real patriot is someone who loves their country enough to speak up. I love that, people. Speak up, out loud style, right? I guess I would be a patriot, wouldn't I be now? How about you? Are you a patriot? So they speak up when they see something that needs to be changed. not someone who blindly assumes that their government knows best and is always right no matter what. Now, that is a darn good definition of a patriot, people. I like that definition right there. And I can tell you unequivocally, I would be a patriot, no doubt about it. Because you see, I'm one of those cats that speak up and wants to put justice where injustice is. I want to right the wrongs, you see. Now, that's innate in some of us, and many of you out there would probably fall into that category as well, I'm guessing, based on our listeners. But there are, you know, it's a good piece of the population that don't subscribe to this theory. They have a different modem in life that they're after. Different goals. They would not fall into that capacity, people, of a patriot. Now, a patriot can be a lot of things to a lot of people. But I like the definition of what we describe here, that we're willing to speak up when things need to be changed. I'll tell you what, a lot of things need to be changed at this point, aren't there now, huh? You know, there are a few things to point out when we talk about globalism versus patriotism or nationalism. And it's become a hot topic in America, specifically since Donald Trump took the presidency, no doubt. But a lot of that fight started before Trump. You know, there was the whole thing about kneeling at the football game. Remember the disrespect to the flag and disrespect to military law enforcement. That's been coming on for a long time, people. A long time coming. But what's happening is here, you have to look back at that word we talked about earlier, motivation. That's the word of the day here, motivation. So what's the motivating factor of those people? And I've been thinking about that quite a bit, actually. Well, there's the politically correct crowd. Now, the politically correct have an agenda, and their agenda is not to be truthful, clearly. Their agenda is that they want things to be a certain way, a certain style, a certain formula, a formula that fits their world, something that, because they have another agenda. They have a different motive. Their motivations are different than yours and mine. And there are a lot of people who are politically correct, and they get upset with the Donald Trumps of the world because Trump is not a politically correct kind of dude. Now, listen, you probably already know that Malcolm is not a politically correct fellow either, am I now? Huh? I never have. And I'm respectful. I'm a gentleman. I know how to be that. But I'm not politically correct. I mean, when I used the term the other day in the show that you heard where I said America has become the world's bitch, I got a lot of email in on that. Why would I call America the world's bitch? Well, because it was the truth. Now, that's not a politically correct statement to make, people. But when you have trade deals that are upside down and when we're paying the kinds of fees we've been paying to organizations like NATO and when we continue to divert our resources, and we continue to, you know, put our blood and treasure out there, well, then and people take it, and then not only do they take advantage of it, but they come to expect it, and then they demand it, and as soon as you let them do this, they absolutely, then they're insulted when you pull it away from them. They say, how dare you do that? This isn't right. You're a xenophobe. You're a racist bastard. You're all of that. Well, why? Well, because you're not giving me what you gave me before. So that makes you evil. See, that's where Trump came in and he started to do all of that. He rearranged the chairs on the deck. Pissed everybody off, in fact, you see. Because a lot of those people don't want those chairs rearranged, you see. They kind of like the idea of being a Titanic. That's about where we're at, I guess. That's a hell of a descriptive, isn't it? I guess it's always about defining the iceberg, though, isn't it? No, the iceberg. It's different to everybody, clearly. Wow. Gets heavy from there. My mind just went into 50 different places, I have to tell you. I was thinking icebergs. I just did a show on climate change. I was thinking about the polar caps and all that craziness that's going on with those people who think the sky is falling. Wow. It's crazy. The kind of information out there, the misinformation out there is astounding. Absolutely astounding. So politically correct is a fool's game, number one. Now, you can still be a gentleman and a lady. You don't have to be a jackass. You know, there's a difference between all of that, you know. But the politically correct is, it's a suicide mission. And then you have these other words that the world has been thrown around, and certainly our puppets and politicians here in America have, diversity. We want diversity and we want equality. We want equality for everybody because we don't like people making more money. We don't like people being more successful, and we want some of what they got. And we're not necessarily want to work for it, but we would like government to spread that around, please. Well, that's called equality, diversity. Those are Malcolm's dictionary. I have my own dictionary. It's even beyond the Urban Dictionary. It's Malcolm's dictionary. I'll send you a copy of that one time, huh? When I get it in print. But those are the definitions of diversity and equality. That's what they want. They want what you want, and they don't want to work for that, but it falls under the guise of equality, diversity for all. Back to that vision of everybody holding hands in the sunlight, yeah? You know? So we've been seeing a transition, people, happen in around the globe. We've been paying attention to what's been happening in Europe with the globalist movement. We've seen what's going on with the UK. You know, a lot of the British people finally just stand up and said, hell, we want out of here. We don't like this exercise. We're not motivated by this world order where we all fall under one camp. And of course, Europe has all kinds of backgrounds and thousands of years of history and languages and culture and diverse and all of this. And how do you make that equality? And you can't make that equality in Europe. That's a hell of a leap. That's nuts. I mean, there already is diversity in Europe. It's a very diverse community. It's never going to be equal, or the equality of that is a crazy man's game. But there were a lot of people, Macron's and the Merkel's and the May's, and all of these countries, all of these people, they see a different world. Well, even Theresa May didn't like Brexit. She didn't want Brexit. She was uncomfortable with Brexit, and she rebuked Brexit, and she fought against Brexit and couldn't get Brexit passed. And she was trying to subvert the election, where everybody had a different mode, where the British stood up and said, we really want to try. Well, there's a lot of reasons why the British stood up and said enough is enough. Shocked a lot of people. They didn't think they would have the gumption to pull out of the European Union. But again, a lot of the borders came down in Europe. It became one world kind of government down there. And then you had the infiltration of a lot of refugees and a lot of terrorist activities. And then you weren't safe anymore on the streets. And remember, they were taking the cars and the trucks and running people over on the sidewalks and in the public venue. And then people are going into cafes and movie theaters and all kinds of things and blowing people up. Or you had that whole scene happening globally as well. Now, that doesn't sound like a real globalist movement I'm after, people. If that's the globalist movement we're after, give me some walls quickly, please. I want to build a castle and put the moat just outside of the castle so I can protect myself and my family and friends, yeah? That's not the kind of globalist looking I'm looking for at all. You can keep that one. But the polls, I'm very fascinated with the polls as well, because as you see a lot of these elections coming down the pike, you're going to start hearing a lot more about the polls. Here's the thing I want to tell you right now, people. If you paid attention to what happened in 2016 and in 2018, and you see these elections happening and you see what's happening in Europe, polls don't mean a damn. Because like for me, number one, I don't talk to pollsters. And if I did, I would probably lie to them anyways. Because polls are only as good as people are going to be truthful and people are going to say their truth. But you see, people aren't doing that when it comes to a lot of this. So the polls mean absolutely nothing. And I get a charge out of the polls right now when they're talking about a general election in 2020 that nobody can predict. And I seen one just this morning, in fact. They had Biden up 15 points if he'd win the presidency. Now, friends, if Joe Biden wins the presidency of the United States of America by 15 points, I'll be your slave or your bitch for the rest of your life. How's that? It ain't going to happen. And there ain't no poll that you're going to see that is going to be truthful at this point, because polls don't mean anything. They're absolutely worthless. There's a whole new world order in place. Well, I went online and I looked up, what are some of the biggest risks? What are the top five concerns of in the world? What are people most concerned with? What are the dangers in the world? And I went and seen one poll, Global Risk Report. And the five risks that will have the biggest impact in the next 10 years, they say, weapons of mass destruction, extreme weather events, natural disasters, failure of climate change, and a water crisis. That's your top five, you know, biggest risks that we have in the world, they say here, that they've done their assessments. Now, none of those five things are going to happen in the next 5 years. So these people are out for lunch somewhere, clearly. That's not even the five dangers that are going to happen here. So it doesn't matter. That's what they put out there. When you look that up, you go search it yourself and see what you find. And that's what I see here with the World Economic Forum. So it doesn't mean anything, people. That's the point here. So listen, what we'll do here, I want to talk about globalism in a different format today, educate you all. And we've got a couple of interesting voices on here today to do that. The expert coming up here first is a man that has been with us now for actually a few years, been writing for the platform, has been a great voice. And so he's got a program up there about globalists versus patriots. And of course, he's using patriots, not just an America patriot, but a patriot is everybody. Patriots are in Europe as well. Patriots of their country. You know, it's not an American term, by the way. And so he says, at last, there is an awakening among we the people outside the United States of America. Now, see, he's talking about their we the people. You understand we the people? That's not just, again, yeah, it's an America we the people, but there's a we the people in Europe. There's a we the people in Britain and the UK. There's a we the people in Italy. There's a we the people in Germany and France. And it's, everybody's got a we the people, right? And so he says, at last, there is an awakening among we the people outside the United States of America to the existential threat posed to human civilization by Sharia and the Muslim invasion of non-Muslim countries allowed by the most delinquent and criminally negligent globalist leaders in Europe. And in the United States, especially under the Democrats and their leftist fascist colleagues. Now, that's a hell of a statement, I'll tell you. But there are a lot of things that I think could risk our salvation in our future. But the point is, there are a lot of threats we need to be aware of in this globalist movement that they're trying to tack onto us. And I'll tell you what, they all are motivated. Question is, are you motivated?
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Glitcher News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Welcome on here. IQ Al Razuli is here. He's the author of Lifting the Veil. IQ is an Iraqi-born Arabic speaker, and he's a great authority. He has a lot of great thoughts, ideas. He's a weekly columnist here at America Out Loud, speaks about the dangers of Islam, but he speaks about, more than that, the dangers of globalization and the dangers of crackpots, I think. I'll call it that, IQ, crackpots, because you speak all the time, pretty out loud style, about what's going on in America as a reflection of the world itself. But I want to start this conversation today with you about Europe, if you don't mind, please. Let's bring it right to Europe, because there's an awakening, it appears, that's happening in Europe. And it's interesting that this plays out at this time with Trump in office in America and what's happening there. But over the last few years, you have not always been optimistic about Europe, because you've seen the writing on the wall with what's happening there. Are you more optimistic today in Europe with what's happening, IQ?
Yes, only because of recent results. The so-called rightists, by the way, let's get this straight. The left, who are fascists, whether it's in America or in Europe, accuse the patriots of being fascists and extremists and Nazis. It's called projective identification. You can Google this.
No, that's great. Let's talk about that. I love what you just put out there. That's a big, big point. And I love what you say there. Let's tell people a little bit more about that. So they're putting out there and they're projecting their ideas, and they're really brilliant at that fact. IQ, that's one of the radical rules. You know that.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I just said. They project upon their victims what they intend to do to the victims. But they say, it's the victims who are trying to do it to us. So they accuse the patriots in Europe of being fascists and Nazis. That's not true. They are patriots, which means they want their sovereignty. They want to have their borders intact. They want to have their culture intact. Well, as intact as it humanly possible. So what's happening? In the latest elections in European Union, the so-called rightists made enormous advances, enormous. In the European Union, they won a lot of seats.
In all the conversations I've had with you, I have never, ever heard that jump in your step yet that I hear right now today. So I want you to take a moment. Let's dive deep here, please. We got the time. Let's tell people, what are some of the victories specifically you can point out, brother, that would give us that light here?
Marine Le Pen in France, she has an advantage now that she didn't have before in the European Union. The British under Nigel Farage, they had a great advantage in the European Union. What's happening? Orban of Hungary stood up to Merkel, had been standing up to Merkel for the last 2.5 years. He said, to hell with you. We have borders. We shall not allow Muslims. We shall not allow anybody that we don't want to have and come into us.
Now, she said that to Merkel, to Germany?
He said publicly, 100%.
Okay.
Okay, so there's no misunderstanding. The same thing with Poland. The same thing with Austria.
Right.
The borders are back again in Europe, by the way. I'm not talking about with electrified borders and everything, but they are now looking at somebody who's coming in, who they are, before they did.
IQ, how are they enforcing? Tell us how they're reinforcing the borders, because the borders had come down there. Now, they don't have walls back up, do they? How are they reinforcing those borders, please?
They have electrified borders now.
Electrified?
Yes, yes. With barbed wire, with troops, with dogs. No, it's not a joke.
So hold on. So when you go over to the fence kind of thing, and it will electrify you and kill you?
Well, I'll tell you what. I would kill anybody who comes to my territory unwelcome. I mean, I don't understand what people are thinking. I told you a few days ago, I was to the Holy Land. I was to Israel. I spent 15 days. I went through all the surrounding area of Israel. I went to the Jordanian border, the Syrian border, the Lebanese border, and the Egyptian border. Had they not put walls, had they not put electrification, electrical fences, Israel wouldn't exist today. In a few months, they had 70,000 Africans coming in. That was before they put the borders. Today, you can't get 2 people in a year.
So now what you're saying to me now, I just want to understand, they've retrained everybody or pretty much around these borders, that they've now got these borders up that are more fences or barbed wire and they're electrified, so you don't go near them or you'll pay with your life. Is that correct?
Yeah, not only electrification, they have soldiers in there.
Okay.
Who come in uninvited, they can shoot you dead.
Right, gotcha. Now, let me ask, and that's happening throughout Europe, you're saying, right?
No, in Europe, they're not doing it as the Israelis. The Israelis, don't forget, Israelis are 6 million Jews surrounded by 400 million Arabs. They want them dead.
Okay.
So it's not the same way. It's not the same, what you call, threat. In Europe, the borders are under control of the police now, much more than before. You can't just travel because you are from Italy. They have to check who you are.
Okay.
Before, they didn't check who you are. You are European, bingo, go in or come out.
So IQ, there's more than the idea of, I want to, because I'm going somewhere with this, the idea of the fences and the barbed wire and the electrocuted borders, there's more than one country doing this at this point, correct? Can you tell me that?
Yes, even the Italians. Now the Italian government is going to penalize any ship which sends people in the Mediterranean €50,000 every time.
Wow.
We're not talking about peanuts money. We're talking about a huge amount of money.
All right. So two thoughts come to my mind. Number one, let's tell people, please. Let's make sure everybody understands why this big change in Europe. Explain to people why. This is important because the dangers were important. So why this big change in the mindset in Europe?
Europe and America have been welcoming refugees throughout their history. No question about that. From all over the world. No problem at all. The only problem occurs, and I repeat it again and again, I've been doing it for about 30 years now, with Muslims. Why with Muslims? Because Muslims are prohibited by their Quran, by their Sharia, from ever integrating or assimilating among non-Muslims. Let me give you an example. An example of the depravity of the Muslim mind. Muslims run away from their dysfunctional countries in Africa and Asia. They come to Europe, they come to America for a better standard of living and freedom. And what do they do with this? They try to bring the very Sharia they run away from and impose it upon the host nation. It's happening in America as we speak today. You have no Sharia compliant places in the United States of America. This should never happen. This should not be allowed. Why? Simple. Sharia is the nemesis of the American Constitution. You have already, you've had it for since the Republic was created. What it does it say? There should be no discrimination, no incitement between one group against another group. But the Muslims incite in every mosque, every single Friday, in every country on earth for the last 1,400 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 388, you have 338 million Americans. I said that before to you also on your show. You haven't had a single American, either in politics or outside politics, who had the backbone and the knowledge to stand up and say that Ilhan Omar, the Minnesota Muslima, and Rashida Tlaib, the Minnesota, from, was it Washington now? From
Ilhan Omar is from Minnesota and Rashid Tlaib is from Michigan.
Michigan, exactly. Mm-hmm. They swore on the Quran allegiance to America. This is a travesty. You can't swear on the Quran allegiance to a country which is not Muslim. Right. Not a single American stood up and said that.
IQ, a lot of people are perplexed, seriously, about how these two ended up in Congress. Speaking of Representative Omar and Representative Tlaib, tell folks how that happened.
They were elected in Minnesota. Many of the people who are in Minnesota who elected her were from Somalia.
Were from Muslim. And how did they get there? Tell people how did they get there?
By Obama.
That's exactly it. That's exactly
By Obama, the same thing happened with Rashida Tlaib.
Yeah.
In Detroit, it's full of Muslims. Right. Again, they were brought by Obama.
So there was political motivation. I just want people to hear this point now. I don't want to gloss over this again. Political motivation here, people, from the Barack Obama administration. I just want you to hear this clearly. It's not a partisan statement. It's just a fact. So they brought in a lot of these refugees from Somalia and others, the Muslim communities, and that's what you see rising in Minnesota, Michigan, and now he's saying Detroit as well. And you got to remember, Detroit has gone through a rude awakening over the past 10, 15 years. They were given real estate to weigh out there, basically to get a population to stay, because the city had gone to hell in a handbag, as most of our cities in America is happening, because of far-left radical socialist agendas. Our cities they're being decimated from sea to shining sea. And here's a perfect example about what the previous administration did. I don't think it's a point we should gloss over. And so here's the thing. I want to now ask you this question, please, now that we're on this topic here. I seen a report the other day that there were a lot of new Muslims getting ready to run for Congress in the new election. The numbers were staggering. In the last election, there were like 90 or something running. I don't know what the number, we don't know really, because it's still happening here. What's your sense about that? Do a lot of them feel privileged now where they will be able to run for office and they're going to try to do that? What do you see happening?
First of all, they were elected by Muslims.
Right.
And that's fair.
That's
it's
right.
Legal.
That's right.
I have no problem with that one.
That's
they
right.
Legally, but they cannot be loyal. I don't give a damn how many of them there are. No Muslim, I repeat it again, and I challenge every American who is listening, including Muslims, to prove anything I'm just saying is wrong at all. It is impossible, I repeat the word impossible, for any Sharia compliant Muslim to be both a good Muslim and a loyal citizen among non-Muslim kuffar.
Okay. All right. The reason, now let me jump in here. There's a lot of commentary out in the public square about how these people, Omar and Tlaib, as we're talking about right here, for instance, that they're very anti-America. Now, listen, you all have your opinions, and they do put a lot of comments out there that appear to be very anti-American. Now, I want to bring that back to what IQ is saying right now. So what he's saying is, when these people took office, they did not put their hand on the Bible or the Constitution, or swear to our Constitution, if you will. That is not what they did here. As most people put their hand on the Bible, and that's how they come in and say they swear to the Constitution. They swore to the Quran, and they actually put their hands on the Quran. Is that correct, IQ?
Correct.
Right. And so they swore to that. And I think what people need to know, understand now, to educate them just a bit further, IQ, the dangers of the Quran. Now let's keep this black and white a moment, so we're not in gray area here. So why can't a peaceful, loving Muslim, and just answer this simple for me, why cannot a peaceful, and I use the word peaceful, everybody hear what I'm saying here, loving Muslim, read the Quran, study and honor the Quran, and not honor the Constitution, and live here in America freely and support what we're doing? Why can't that happen, sir?
Because the Quran prohibits them.
Because? What does it say?
The Quran prohibits them from ever being loyal. I'll give you an example. I will recite to you, because other people, otherwise the American people who are listening will not believe me. By the way, as I'm reciting it to you, you can Google it. I'm reciting from the Quran, Al-Ma'idah, chapter 5, verse 51. I'm quoting, "O ye who believe, Muslims, take not the Jews and the Christians for your friends and protectors, they're but friends and protectors to each other. And he amongst you Muslims that turns to them for friendship is of them." Ladies and gentlemen, the implications of the last sentence is of immense importance. And I repeat it. "And he amongst you Muslims that turns to them, the Christians and the Jews, for friendship is of them," means that any followers of Muhammad who befriend or are under the rule of Christians or Jews or any non-Muslim group, by the way, would be considered apostates to Islam, outsiders to Islam, enemies of Islam who must be slaughtered. In a nutshell, ladies and gentlemen, no Muslim in the USA or in any non-Muslim country can ever be loyal to the American Constitution, because the American Constitution is man-made, not from Allah Sharia. Mm-hmm. Nor can any Muslim in the USA or any non-Muslim country be a loyal citizen, because non-Muslim Americans are called infidel kuffar, unbelievers, kafirun, to be either subjugated or exterminated. Again, I will offer $200,000 to the first person who can prove me wrong.
Subjugated or exterminated. Let's get that out there, please. Okay. All right. So, and what they're doing, which explains oftentimes why you have a lot of people in this religion, this movement, this cult, whatever you want to call it, why they tend to kill other people that are, as you call, the infidels, correct?
Correct.
And that's legal in what they're doing in their so-called religion, right?
Malcolm, first of all, it's not a religion, it's a cult belief system.
A cult religion, call it what you want, yeah.
No. There is a difference between calling it what I want and proving it.
Sure.
Everything I say, every single item I speak about, I can prove it beyond a shadow or even a reasonable doubt.
Right.
Most important of all, it doesn't matter what a Muslim swears on, because under the taqiyya rule, taqiyya is, it's sanctified in the Quran,
okay,
that any Muslim and every Muslim has the right to deceive non-Muslims whenever they feel like it.
Do you see a lot more people running, Muslims running for Congress coming up in the next election? What's your crystal ball say?
Yes, because they want to subvert you. Look, you have two Muslims now, and look what's happening.
Right.
Look what's happening. 100 years, for 100 years, the Jews of America supported the Democrat Party. In 1 month, the Democrat Party supported the Muslims against the Jews. In 1 month. So you tell me what's going to happen.
Yeah, amazing. Just absolutely amazing. So let's put that on the side a moment here now. Let's put that on the side. I think we've drawn some pretty interesting conclusions to what we're speaking about here. Let's bring back to this globalist versus patriot movement. There are a lot of people here in America who are, they're really conflicted, and they're concerned and they're outraged with some of the statements that have been put out there by Representative Omar and Representative Tlaib. And they have been, a lot of that. And a lot of people don't understand how they got into office, which is why I wanted to point out it was through those communities and through people that were moved there through the Obama administration. It's important everybody know that. There's an agenda there, people. And the agenda is pretty clear. It's just follow the facts. There's no conspiracy here. It's just all true. And then you just got to follow the truth here. So, and we say what the danger is. Let's talk about the dangers a moment. When we hear the word globalism, and we talk about a one world movement, you have a lot of powerful people in here trying to unite the world. And you have a lot of these people that, a lot of the George Soros kind of people are big in the globalist movement. And there's a lot of others like that. There's Buffett and Bill Gates, and there's a whole litany of these people. Now, how do you compare it's a couple questions here. What's the biggest danger to all of us on the West? What do you think the biggest danger is in this idea or movement to a one world globalist movement? What's the biggest danger?
Islam. You know, it's amazing. The people you recited, the Soros and the others, are completely and utterly clueless. Mm-hmm. It is impossible. It is literally impossible for anybody to make peace and equality with Islam. Islam is by itself racist.
Are you suggesting, with, again, the glimmer of hope that you've given, because I've not seen that glimmer of hope before with Europe, are you saying they got to the point and they're finally starting to connect the dots there? Is that what's happening?
I'm talking about the ordinary men and women who are now against their government. Yes, but they are at the moment a minority. You have in America, you have this. Listen, in America, 47% of your people are stupid. Mm-hmm. I'm not being nasty. It is inconceivable that anybody should go against Donald Trump. Inconceivable. The man, he has had 95% of the time against him in the news media and in politics. And yet he has done more in 2.5 years than any president before him. He is unique. He is exceptional. Why? Because he believes America is exceptional. And America is exceptional.
I don't think the Islam movement is the biggest danger to the West or to America. I think the biggest danger to America in the West is their own ignorance, IQ.
Yes, I agree with you.
I think the battle comes from within. I think the fact that people are not paying attention, and people, as you say, 47%, you're being generous, that are ignorant to that point, people have turned it off, and the other people have been brainwashed, and they're being brainwashed in our schools and our education system as well, which we continue to point out.
They are not ignorant, they're stupid. Why do I say they're not ignorant, they're stupid? I associate ignorance with somebody who can't read and write or doesn't have information. At the click of a mouse, you have 20 billion pages on Google. Yeah. Why? I don't even need Google. Watch the news, read the news. Every single day, the greatest number of people who are being murdered, the genocide, is against Christians by Muslims.
Yeah, but you can't watch the news and get that. I disagree with you. The news does not put that out there. You have to dig deep. Now, here's the point you're not understanding. You have to dig deep. You have to do your research. You have to connect the dots. You're not going to get that in the media, IQ, ever.
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you what. Every day in the news media, they have a report about Christians being slaughtered here and there and there. You can't hide it.
They are hiding it. The media does not report on these things. The media in America does not report on these things. You listen to NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, you look at any of these. And even Fox News is the same thing. They're all beaten to the same drum. Okay?
Okay.
No. And the New York Times and the Washington Post, all of them across the board, all of these public, Dallas, LA, it doesn't matter what publication, they're all radical to the far left.
They are not radical. They are the enemies of the people.
And you can't even tell people to go Google. See, I disagree with you. You said just go Google. You can't even do that anymore because Google is one of the biggest problems we have right now. In fact, there is legislation being put up. The politicians are looking at possibly calling them what they are, a monopoly in the search engine business. And they have a radical far-left agenda. So you can't really even search and understand you're getting the truth. They manipulate the search findings. The point is they've already bought all this. They already have all the technology in line, IQ.
They should be broken up. They are they should use the RICO Act against them.
That's exactly
because
it.
They're together in a criminal organization. Together.
And I've asked this question to people on this platform and a lot of patriots, and they don't believe it. They don't think they should be broken up. They think it's all good. I disagree with them. I also think it's time to break them up. I think it's time to break all of them up because they've got too much power, and their power is all sided to one part of this program. And they're in control. They're in control. But that's, again, a lot of conservatives and a lot of people have, they've dropped the ball here. They don't own any of the technology companies, IQ. They don't own any of the search engines. They don't own the social media. They don't own the newspapers. They don't own the television. They don't own anything.
I'll tell you what. If Donald Trump is elected again 2020, he will break them up.
We'll see.
Every single one of them up.
We'll see. He's a different character, no doubt. A lot of Republicans, which most Republicans are worthless as well, they don't see it either. They're not seeing it as a problem because they beat to the same deep state drum as the rest of them do. You know, they're all in the same camp together here. So let me bring back, let's draw a couple of conclusions here. So you like what's going on in Europe. You think the people are finally standing up tall, and you think there's a possibility now. And the way you outline those borders, what if we did that same sort of border here? We fenced and electrocuted, what have you. Do you realize how loud those cries would be from the far left? We could never do that here. You know that.
Do you think I would give a damn? Do you think I would give a damn? The stupidity of the American people is there. You know, they are undermining you.
Yeah, I know.
They are not immigrants. This is an invasion, by the way. Yeah. They are also bringing Muslims with them.
Well, they're bringing terrorists. They're bringing bad people. Drug cartels, bad, evil people, IQ. Yeah, it's all bad. It's all bad. I mean, you don't have really pleasant people that are going to go to Sunday school coming across the southern border. Those are not the kind of people trying to get in here, basically. There's a lot of crime there, you know?
It's an invasion.
It is an invasion. It's been an invasion coming on for so long. And obviously, this president is limited to what he can do here. There's no doubt about it. You know, people, I'll tell you, you hear IQ. Now, IQ is a very interesting voice. I love talking to him and bringing him on because I think he has a very strong, passionate viewpoint. And I'll tell you all truthfully, IQ is a patriot. He's a patriot. He believes in the order of law. He believes in that world. He believes in Christianity. He believes in God Almighty. He believes in all of the things that many of you out there believe and stand for. But now he's not a politically correct kind of fellow. He does say what's on his mind, as you've just heard, and he doesn't do it to, he does it to get the point across because people are not listening and they're not paying attention and the dangers are real. And that's kind of where we stand right now. I'll tell you what, I've got another interesting voice coming up here. Let's take it forward here on the Voice of a Nation here. Globalists versus patriots. Where do you stand?
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. Sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
We stay strong as a people. There's nothing we can't do. Nothing we can't do. Let me bring on here and welcome on Dennis Santiago. Dennis is an American strategist. He's a great philosopher, actually. He's actually the guy I talk to when I need sometimes common sense in something, believe it or not. He's a patriot as well. But more than that, his subject matter expertise is about strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and what we're talking about here, global stability. Dennis, let's start at 35, 45,000 feet as we can. We've seen the demise of Europe. I've not heard a jump in IQ step from the beginning. He has been pretty pessimistic when it comes to Europe in all the times I've talked to him. I've noticed a glimmer in some of his writings and some of his recent conversations about Europe, which really got me thinking there's some things happening out there. And I figured let's talk to him because he's out there. He can understand and help us understand what's really happening. And how we might use it here in America, what's happening. He's a big fan of Trump, as you can see, because he thinks Trump is really an outsider. But I think in this war of globalism and where the players are, what is the biggest danger to America right now?
At the moment? Okay, so let's go 30, 40,000 feet and just close out the discussion with Europe. What's actually happening in Europe right now is that people are rediscovering nationalism. You got things like Brexit, you got things like Poland, Catalan and Spain. People are rediscovering that a one world kumbaya model doesn't really work over the long term because it has economic problems. Let's dive a little bit deeper into that. There are two kinds of globalist tendencies that have shown up in the world. One of them is a utopian globalism where essentially, if you really think about it, what these people that believe in this are trying to do is they're trying to solve the world's cultural problems by forcing everybody to live with each other. And it's causing other kinds of problems that have been exacerbated by the invention of this thing called social media. The other globalist problem is one that has to do with economics in that the world, starting in about the 1990s, went to a global economy model that interlinked the various nations of the earth into a gigantic supply chain. And we have become addicted to that. In the years since then, we have also found that even that economic globalist model has issues where eventually you have to return to nationalist principles having to do with trades and tariffs. And that is one of the things that is going on in the world right now. So when you say globalism versus patriotism, what you're really doing is asking the question whether or not these two utopian models of how the world people theoretically thought things should work are still valid going into tomorrow. And my position on that is no, they're not.
Because?
Because the countries in Europe have these problems. And you think about it, in the United States, we have similar problems where we have disparities in wealth, disparities in social status. And again, inside of our country, the people that have these globalist tendencies, it's utopian, are trying to force everybody to live together and become the same, when in fact, the reality is in Europe, the reality is in the United States, the reality is in pretty much every part of the world. Mm-hmm. People are not the same. The United States, for instance, was founded on a principle where every individual is different. And that model requires that you do not force people to become the same. And that's where I say patriotism comes in, because the United States is a plural nation, mm-hmm. not a social nation.
That's right. And we're not supposed to be inequality-driven. That's not what we're supposed to be here. And but yet that's being hijacked from a lot of political leaders and people who are trying to make that their go-to message. You know, you see that in a lot of political campaigns, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, more than that, what you're seeing now is you're seeing people, they're not out to make everybody equal at this point. If you look at the political process that is particularly domestically in the United States, and is that individual, what are really plural groups, have not found a way to integrate with the core of U.S. society. And so instead of finding ways to live together, they've gone the opposite direction, basically saying, I'm going to live in my own little echo chamber. I'm going to do what I want. And you need to put up with me, because that's my definition of equality. You need to live with what I want to do, even though it's the dumbest thing in the world.
And here's the thing, Dennis, a lot of what you point out there, those people, they're the vast small minority who have the biggest mouths, who are doing this. We're talking about the vast minority. You understand?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you're talking about 1% slices of...
That's it. That's it. And they're trying to hijack the whole system and make us suck up to them, right?
Yeah. And if you really think about that, you know, what that phenomenon looks like, the closest model to it is the third world countries where 1% of the people control 99% of the world, of the wealth. In this case, in the United States, the wealth here is control over the public discourse. You know, it's not money. It's control over politics. And so you have these 1%ers attempting to take control of the entire political apparatus for their own benefit. It's right. Superficial. It's selfish and it's wrong.
Well, yeah, but they're getting away with it because they're fooling most of the people most of the time. And as I pointed out to IQ, that the entire media structure is destroyed. So there is no truth out there at all. When he said, just go Google it, you can't. When he said, just go read, just watch the news, you can't. Dennis, you can't. No. It's not going to make it right or wrong.
No, you can't. And the reason you cannot see this structure there is because people are in denial of it. We're a very polite society. You know, we don't like to raise waves.
This is a hell of a what if, by the way. What if we put out I asked him the question about he talked about the barbed wire fence, electrocution, what have you. You ever see that at our southern border, Dennis Santiago?
No, I don't see that at our southern
border. And, I mean, what's your theory on this? How does Europe get away with putting these borders up there with electrocution, barbed wire, and all this that he said to us they're doing? And versus we could never do that because it would be so against the Statue of Liberty that they would have a heart attack. I mean, I don't even know what they'd do on the left. I'm not sure what they do. But why is that disparity? Talk to me about that disparity.
I mean, you just have to look at European history, Malcolm. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, European history. Remember that Europe, as we know it today, was the place where the Romans said everybody there was crazy, wild, and would beat you over the head with a stick the first chance they get. And guess what? The Romans were kind of right. And so when they get to these kinds of solutions where they're used to building walls, they're used to getting hard borders set up between each other because they've been living with these kinds of phenomenon for thousands of years.
So are they more barbaric in Europe? Is that it?
I mean, that's one way to put it, but in the other sense is they've also been invaded, overrun, gone through hardships over and over again that we live in a pretty gentle country.
That's why I put that word out there because barbaric, because if we listen, if we had put an electrocuted fence up on the border to any measure, the word barbaric would come up. You understand?
Oh, yeah, of course it would. And, you know, and to a certain extent, it is. You know, we're not under existential threat from our neighbors. The Europeans have had to live with existential threats from their own neighbors for, ever since the fall of the Roman Empire.
Yeah, and it continues on there as well. But again, in previous conversations with him, he thought Europe was never coming back. Now he sees a little bit of glimmer of hope, which I find very interesting. And do you have that same bit of hope as well with what you're seeing there?
Yes, I do. I think that the developments that are going on there, you know, the Brexit movement people go back and forth on it. They're not quite sure if they want to abandon the mutual support model because, again, like I said earlier, the global tendency to need to have larger connected economies for economic purposes is a very strong reason to band together because that makes Europe an area that has about a $12 to $14 trillion economy, which puts them, if they can stay together, on parity with places like the United States and China. So that's a very attractive thing if they could pull it off. The problem is they, like the United States, have to pull off an economic miracle alongside a cultural plurality model. And that's not the easiest thing to do when you have a tradition of beating each other up across borders.
We talked also, one of the points we made was the relationship of Omar and Tlaib in Congress here. Do you see this as an isolated incident, these two Muslims that were elected to Congress, or do you see this as more of a trend moving forward?
At the moment, it looks fairly isolated. I mean, you've got these people came out of isolated communities that were created by the previous administration in sectors of the United States. So they actually created... The best word for it, the European word for it, I mean, we use it in a derogatory fashion here, but it's kind of a ghetto, okay, which is a hyper-concentration of a particular group of people. Mm-hmm. And in Europe, they call them concentration areas. So be careful with how that works. But essentially, we created a district by concentrating people from the same ethnic group. And eventually, that makes it easy to elect somebody from that area that can have outlier values into the system. That's a phenomenon that does exist, and we created some of these things. I think it behooves us to re-examine whether or not we should be concentrating people that way as a matter of policy, or if we're going to take in refugees, but should we really turn them into congressional districts? That's the question. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's an easy answer as well. And there's a lot of other questions that we could give easy answers to, for sure. In the theory of this fight of globalism versus patriotism, do you see, with America right now in the shift, in 2020 coming fast now, does patriotism win?
Ultimately, it's a yes and no. Okay, because there are economic incentives that make global economies very, very attractive. Even if you have segmented global economies where you have harder barriers of trades and tariffs, and we're exploring that with the Chinese right now, in the sense of cultural globalism, I think that is destined to fail, because ultimately, whether you couch it as patriotic nationalism or you couch it in some of its more academic terms like agency theory, human beings are individuals, and you cannot erase that from this planet.
That's a great point, buddy. That's a great point. And, I will tell you all that this pivotal point we talk about with globalism versus patriotism, or some people use the word nationalism as well, it is a moment in truth, I think, more than anything, for this country, for America. And you've seen this shift now happening where the country was going more toward a globalist movement. As I say, over the past 35 years, really, people, it's been happening. Vast many administrations, but it came to a head really through the last administration. And that's where Trump, I think you finally seen the outcry from the core of America in the election of Donald Trump to office. This is actually today we've covered as a very good lesson about how we got here and what the dangers are ahead. And of course, the question I ask you out there, what America do you envision? What kind of America? But here's the thing you want to remember. If America is going to remain the land of the free and the home of the brave, and it's going to be that shiny city on a hill and the majestic America that I speak to you, then America has to be strong. If America is going to be strong, America has got to be independently strong. It's got to be that union. It's got to be that republic. It's got to be that it's got to be right the core of America. It's got to be the strength of America, the people of America. If we get a shot forward, people, it's got to be on that basis. As soon as we get filtered down into the internationalist soup, there will be no more America at that point, which that should teach you and show all of you that a movement of globalists is not the answer forward. And it actually is probably the demise of the world. America is the light and the shine and the hope of the world and the work that it does around the world. So there's a reason for that. I hope that you'll explain this to your friends on the left and your moderates, as always, that there's a purpose to this, and there's a purpose to why we want America to stand free and stand independent, free of the globalist and the movement of others. And that's how we do this thing, people. It's time for you to get involved and get loud.